booklets. And with that said, I would like to introduce the warm-up speaker, John.
You know, before I start, I always give glory to God and to the halls of AA, because this is why I'm sober. You know, my name is John Costa, and I'm a worthless alcoholic. That's what my wife tells me. You know, and I know I'm going to look at you right now and tell you that you people have never seen me before, and I've never seen you, but we know. We know what each other's about, and I want to welcome that newcomer. Any newcomer in here doing what's right for him in his life. You know, my story, I kind of got to be the short talker. You know, that's kind of hard for me. I was always the kind of sat back in the back of the room and kept my mouth shut because I was scared. But once I got fired up into AA and stuff, I don't want to shut up. So it's going to be hard for me to break down a part of my story in 10 or 15 minutes. But I want to tell you, by the grace of God, that it's an honor here to be in front of you people this evening and to share my story, because my story starts with this man that is the main speaker. He is my sponsor. 53 years ago in high school, there was two young cowboys that all they had was hell raising on their mind. And we're out in the parking lot, didn't know each other. And next thing we know, we're in the back of somebody's car smoking and chewing tobacco, because it's illegal at school to have tobacco. You know what I mean? And we became friends. And we went through the only thing, you know, it's a great thing in a way. You know, they talk about that invisible line that we cross as an alcoholic. You know, well, me and my sponsor, we was saddled up and we was coming hard and fast when we rode across that line, because all we had on our mind was wild women, rodeos, and honky tonk. You know what I mean? That was it. And that's the way it ran. That's the way it ran for a long time. You know, he got addicted to rodeo, and I kind of got addicted to rodeo. I got hurt, got smart, and pulled out at an early age, and I went to being a cowboy working on a ranch. And that's what my life is, and what my life is still, and I'll die with my boots on, because I'm proud of being a cowboy. But it started off with us running around, and we'd have times in between where we'd be close, and then we'd have two or three or four or five months where we'd be apart. And he started working graveyard, and I was a day man. I couldn't handle graveyard, you know what I mean? So I moved down to a little town where he's from. It had a little bar called the Slider Club, and we home people that go in there call it the steak pit, because that's what the hell it was, you know what I mean? And I was down there for a lot of years, and I was watching my friends get tied up in drugs, and I was watching the drugs take over, and I was watching the alcohol take over, and I'm sitting right in the middle. All my friends are dying. You know, the ones on drugs you can't trust anymore, because they'll steal you blind. You know, and the alcoholics, they're dropping off left and right, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, I got to get the hell out of this town. So I go looking for my partner, you know, my best friend. And I know he's ready. You know, we was like old Hank Williams Sr. We was always the first ones on the bus and ready to ride. You know what I mean? So I run across him. I looked for him for about 3 or 4 months, and I run across him, and I was so happy to see him, you know, because all the friends that I drank with, they're dopers now, and they're dead, you know what I mean? And I'm out there by myself, and an alcoholic don't do good when he drinks alone, you know, believe me, I didn't. And I see him one day, and we pull off to the side of the road, and we're talking, and he walks up to me, and he looks me straight in the eye, and he says, "We can't be friends no more." And man, that shocked me. I went back and I'm going, "You son of a bitch, why can't we be friends anymore? We did everything together." And he told me, he says, "I got myself clean and sober." He says, "I don't drink no more. I don't go to honky tonks no more." You know, so I didn't know what else to say. I got in my truck and left, and I rode around for about 3 months wondering what I do to get this guy to come with me again. You know what? And I went home and told my wife, you know, she was, you know what, I was her worst nightmare. When I met my wife 46 years ago, she was a 40-year gal that was, you know, all she knew about was a little bit of wine, no no crazy honky tonking, and then she married me, and I showed her the hell end of the life that we had to go through to get here. You know what I'm saying? And this man here, we were having trouble with my daughter. She was 19 years old, and I told my wife, I said, "Hell, Randy, quit drinking, man. He changed." My wife's eyes got that big, and goes, "Boy, she starts." Next thing she knows, she's in Al-Anon. So I'm standing out here, still waiting. They're waiting for me to come through the door. I get, you know, every night my wife leaves at 7 o'clock, you know, in my alcoholic mind, I'm thinking, she's got another man after this many years of putting up with my beautiful kid, that she's got another man. So I come one night to a little fellowship that we used to go to down there in Modesto. It ain't there no more. It's called Freeway Fellowship. And I come in there like a cowboy come in there. I kick the door in. Al-Anon was in the back, and I'm in an AA meeting, man, and I'm scared shitless. I sat down in that back here, and I sit there and I'm going, "Oh man, what have I got myself into now?" Because my picture of Alcoholics Anonymous was a pretty bad picture. You had to be a wino, you had to be a schizo bum, you know what I'm saying? Some of the stuff that people have to do, and I wasn't that way. I was a functional alcoholic, you know what I mean? I had a job, I raised a family, I thought I was a good husband and stuff, but it all started out with, as soon as I told my wife, "This man's sober," we were going to do an intervention on my daughter. And there's me and this man and my wife and the counselor in a room. And they're all taking, I'm the last one to talk. And every one of them's talking about my daughter, and everybody's clean. And I'm, you know, being the alcoholic that I am, I'm in this little room, and I'm trying to find a place to put my big ass to hide. I don't want to talk, because everything you're saying is about me. You know what I mean? So I stopped kicking that door in, and I sat down in that chair, and I started listening to what I was hearing, you know what I mean? I felt the love. You know, I grew up in a family where if you cried or you hugged, you got the shit stomped out of you. That wasn't being a man. You know what I mean? That's just the way old Portuguese work. You know what I mean? You work your ass off, you don't bitch. You just eat, sleep, and work. And at that point, that very first year, I got a chip. And that very first year, I had to bury my daughter. She was murdered. You know what I mean? That's because the halls, AA, they kept me sober so I could go to my daughter's funeral and be a sober man instead of going to that funeral and being a drunk son of a bitch saying, "Get him out of here. I'm one of them type of people that you only invite to your house one time when I'm drunk. You know what I mean? Because I don't care when I get under alcohol. You know what I'm saying? I'm just a little bit nervous tonight, you know. But the hell, that's part of being an alcoholic. If you lose that nervousness, you'll go back out on the street. But you know what? That first year, I saved my life. I saved my marriage, because the counselor right off the get told me and my wife, "The way he is, you ain't got 6 months." You know what I mean? So I got myself clean and sober, and I did a geographical. I took off. I was working in town, and I hated it because I didn't want to be around people with my daughter. You know, you go through things with the normal people like, "Boy, if that was me, I'd kill that son of a bitch." You know what I mean? And I'm going every night to a meeting telling him, "I got to go hug this son of a bitch." You know what I mean? So I'm confused. So I do a geographical. I go to work on this big cattle ranch, and I think I got the world by the tail. There's only, my wife has got a job where she's out of town all week. It's just me and the dogs and looking. You know, I've spent more time looking at cows' asses than I have a human ass. You know what I mean? That's the way it is with a cowboy. When you're riding on them cows, all you see is their asses. But you know what? I got there, and I was happy, and I was going to meetings, and I thought I had the world by the tail because I did it right. You know what I mean? And I quit. I quit going to meetings. I had AA people coming out there, but I was too busy to listen to what they say, and I quit. I quit going to meetings, and one day, after I did my chores in the morning, I used to go to Oakdale there and eat breakfast. They had a pretty good place to breakfast, and all of a sudden, this is how cunning and baffling this disease is. You know what I mean? I'm the happiest man in Oakdale at the time. And I walked out of that restaurant having some good bacon and eggs, and there's an Arab with a liquor store. I don't mean to hurt anybody if you're Arab, but they owned the liquor store. And at the time of resting on my laurels and not going to meetings, you know what I mean? I let hate built up in me. That's one thing that my sponsor told me that I had to deal with. I had to deal with this hate over my daughter. You know what I mean? And what I did was, as a good alcoholic, I stuffed it down. It ain't going to come back up. But that day, from a short walk from the restaurant to the liquor store, I bought a fifth of whiskey, and I went and do it just like a cowboy does. I went back to the ranch, and I sat on a porch, and I'm sitting there drinking this whiskey, and I said, I'm going to go kill a man that killed my daughter. And I had my horse saddled up. I was going to do it the right way. I'm cowboy all the way. You know what I mean? I had my horse. I had my 30-30, and I got so drunk that I was irrigating, and I had to go out and change the water, and I live way out in the country where there's no lights, and I forgot to turn the lights on at the house. And when I got out there to change the water, I got lost for 4.5 hours. You know? Soaking wet, falling down, soaking wet, pissed off. You know, can't find the house. You know what I mean? And that's when I knew that I had to come back, that I had to go back to meetings. And there's a gentleman in this room tonight that he saved my life, Tio. He was going to the membership that I did. And I finally, you know, I was out for a few days, and everybody I was talking about says, yeah, you got to get back there, buddy. If you don't go back, you're never going back. So I went back. First time I walked in the room, and back then, old timers, they can open up on you. I mean, they could chew your ass up one side and down the other, and you got to sit there and say, yes, sir, yes, sir. You know what I mean? And this old boy, he opened up on me, and I just, you look down at the table, and I said, hell with this shit. I ain't taking this shit. I can go back out there to the ranch and be miserable as hell. And I got up out of my chair to get in my truck, and before I could get to my truck and open the door, Tia was out there saying, John, you got to get your ass back in there, buddy. That chair that you just left is yours. Don't worry about this old boy that's chewing your butt out. He's all done talking. You know what I mean? So you can go in. And that man saved my life, because if I hadn't come back in, I wasn't going to come back in. I didn't want no part of this crap anymore. You know what I mean? I was a honky-tonker. I liked whiskey. It wasn't so much about the women. He always got the women. You know what I mean? But we got drunk together. He'd wait till I'd pass out, then he'd take off with some good-looking old gal. You know? But it didn't happen that way. You know, I got in, and then he tells me, because this man that's going to speak to you walks his walk and talks his talk, and he's 110%er. He told me I got to get involved. And I did. Back then, there wasn't no such thing as styrofoam cup. In them halls, every old timer had a cup, and it had to be hung in the right spot, and it had to be clean, or you'd get your ass ate out. You know what I mean? So I kept coming back, and I come back. And then through this ordeal, my wife, she, instead of running around letting the insanity eat her up, she goes to UOP and gets the degree and becomes a drug and alcoholic counselor. So now I'm living without alcoholic counselor, and she's on me like stink on crap. You know what I mean? I mean, well, that ain't right. Well, that ain't right. You know, and I get tired of telling her, shut the hell up. You know what I mean? Hey, especially Al-Anon women. They ain't taking, you can cut them like you cut the cow, and they ain't going to quit. You know what I mean? But what I did was, is I come back. And 2 weeks ago, I got my 20-year chip. In between, I've been in AA now for 23 years. I just made, should have more time, but I kicked out that one time. So I got two chips for all this time. I got my first year chip that I made it through hell when I buried my daughter, and I wouldn't allow myself. You know what? I felt every time there'd be a speaker meeting, I quit going because I knew I could get a 1-year chip. I could get a 2-year. And every time it made me feel like like an 8-second mule, you know what I mean? And I said, I ain't going. And this man has a men's meeting about 17, 18 years. That's how I learned the big book. You know, cowboys ain't real good with book learning, you know what I mean, and that kind of crap. So every year at his men's meeting, the first thing we do is go through this 12 steps again. That's how I learned about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. See that big book and him talking about it, you know what I mean? And 3 weeks ago, he gave me my 20-year chip. It took me that long that I wouldn't accept it. I just couldn't accept it. I just thought I was trash and I wasn't worth it, and who the hell wants a 7-year chip? I should be getting a 23-year chip, you know what I mean? And I finally come to the terms to where one of these days I got to go up there and I got to cop out to how much time, because when people had asked me about my time, I'd always tell them, and I still say this today, is all I got is 24 hours. That's all God makes me worry about is the 24 hours in the day. That's all I got to worry about, you know. But I got my 20-year chip the other day. It's on account of following this man around. This is the way my life is now. On my right hand, I got a wife that's a drug and alcohol counselor. On my left hand, I got a real good sponsor. And I'm in the middle with God. And that's all I got to do. And that's all where I got to stay. And I want to tell you that this program works. You just got to believe and give it a chance. You have to give up a little bit, but I'll guarantee you, all the cowboys that I know that give it up, they're still alive today. You know what I mean? The rest of the cowboys that I hung with, they're dead. They were buried with their boots on. You know what I'm saying? So I'm grateful and I'm glad that there's a newcomer in here. And I hope that you get it, because it is a simple and easy program. You just got to learn to love it. You can go. We still go to concerts. We still go do stuff that we did when we was drunk out of our minds and couldn't remember. Now it's fun to remember things, you know. It's nice to wake up and know where in the hell you're at. You know what I'm saying? You know, instead of, where was that? We ain't even in the right car. You know what I'm saying? That's the kind of drunks we was. You know what I mean? When you got faster horses, stronger whiskey, and wild women on your mind all the time, you don't care. You don't care. You know what I mean? So I'm grateful. My sponsor called me up and he asked me the other day, he goes, I'm going to talk to you about something. And I said, okay, Dr. Erie, I'm going to get my attitude, but I've been doing pretty good. But he goes, I want you to come and talk, be the 10-minute talker. And I'm giving you first choice. You know what I mean? And man, I thought, holy cow, what an honor to come and talk to people that you don't know, that you do know. I know every one of you. Every one of you know me. We just had different trails we took. You know what I'm saying? And stuff. So I'm grateful. And my time's about up. And I want to thank everybody for inviting me down here. I had a hell of a dinner. And I hope for that newcomer and all the newcomers that come in. It ain't so hard to get sober. All you got to do is put a little bit of grease on it. You know what I mean? And keep coming to your meetings and keep coming back. Thank you very much.
I'd like to introduce our main speaker, Randy, a.k.a. Cowboy.
For you and everybody, my friends call me Cowboy, and I am an alcoholic. I'll answer to Randy as well, but if you go up there to around Modesto and you ask for Randy, why, they're going to send you to somebody else. So if you get around there, just say you know Cowboy, and they'll send you the right guy. But anyway, you know, pleasure to be here tonight and be a part of your speaker meeting, and thank you for having us. I want to thank Rick for the wonderful meal, and I want to thank my partner John one more time. You know, what a story. They really should switch this thing around, let him be the main speaker. The reason I have to drive 2 hours, you know, to share my story, it's so damn boring that nobody up around the place there wants to listen to it anymore. So they say, you know, go on down. You're going too late. Okay, that's a good spot for you. Okay, so anyway, here I am. So you guys are going to have to sit through it here for a little while. But, you know, I... You know, I you're not going to hear any, you're not going to hear any prison. You're not going to hear anything from the streets from me. That's not where I'm from. And I wouldn't last either place for a day, probably. So it's a good thing. But, I come from a little ranch. My folks had a little ranch out there in Salida. And it was a dairy at one time. And growing up as a young child, I had a lot of cousins that lived there with us, so there was a lot of activity all the time, and we'd say, and it was just a great place to be, as far as growing up. And, I was showing John here in the big book about Alcoholics Number 3, the story of him. And you don't have to read very far in his story where it talks about there was nothing in his childhood that would, signify him to be an alcoholic. And there was nothing going on in mine too. In fact, if I could redo my childhood on that same ranch with my same parents, I would do it. So, but then, I'm boring you to death already. But then I started drinking, and things kind of got a little more exciting. So, anyhow, I guess I don't like change. I've got the same address, the same phone number, the same wife. And before we left, I fed a couple of horses down there. One of them's 32 years old that I had born since there at the ranch. So, I'm, and I guess what's important here tonight is that I have the same sobriety date. So, I'm grateful for that. So, and I'm grateful that I found these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, I like to share, sober stuff with you, because that's what we are tonight. We're all here sober, and that gentleman that came up here in red had 3 days. I want to welcome you. You broke a world's record, by the way, that. Because the world's record of sobriety is 24 hours. That's the best we can all do. So welcome. You are well on your way, sir. So just keep coming back. So I do have a couple of drunk stories to share with you. One of them is, I'll start off with this one. They told me when I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous to never forget that last drunk. And what it was is that... In fact, I could read it to you about what it was. And they told me to find myself in this book. And hearing the story, it might have been worse. It says, the last 2 years of my drinking, my entire personality changed to a cynical, intolerant, arrogant person, completely different from my normal self. It was at this stage of my life that resentments came in, resenting anyone and everyone who might interfere with my personal plans and ways of doing things. I was full of self-pity, especially for any interference with my drinking. And I found myself in a lot of places in this book, too, by the way. Sometimes he may tell the truth. He has no more idea why he started on the last minute than you do. All those things. But anyway... growing up, I'm just this backward, buck-tooth, pimple-faced country kid, growing up, and I'm just like any other kid, I want you to like me, and I'm wanting friends and what have you. You got me a pretty good one, too, by the way, don't you think? And growing up around out there in the country and everything, it was a wonderful place to be, and we had these friends out there, and... Well, let me get back to this thing here, this last 2 years of my drinking. I didn't think I was cynical, and then I looked up the word, and then I'll be damned if I ain't cynical, too. But the last 2 years of my drunk, I was at a point where I had no choice in the matter. I was going to drink a case of beer a day. I was going to do other things, and all that. And it was just a way of life for me. That's how I ran, So it was hard to remember that last drunk because it was just a pattern. It was all one way of life. But I remember my first one the best, believe it or not. And it goes something like this. These folks came out from town. They come to get me and my sister and my mother and father, and we was going to this New Year's Eve party. We had some friends down the road that lived from us. They raised racehorses, and they entertained. They had pool table and what have you, and a little swimming pool, what have you, and they barbecued and all this, and they had you over. And there was no alcoholic drinking. There was drinking, but nothing you know, there was no alcoholic drinking that I can remember. And anyway, they bought a new ranch out west of Salida out there, and it's got a brand new house, you know, brand new barns. It's got a swimming pool for people, swimming pool for horses, the whole thing out there, you know, training track, all this thing, you know. And they're going to have the New Year's Eve party. And this is going to be the coup de grace of all New Year's Eve parties, you know. So these folks come pick us up, and we take them on out there. And we get out there, and it's a big old huge house, and the old folks are off over here, and us kids are out here, and then pretty soon, you know, somebody went in there and stole a bottle of vodka, and we're passing it around, mixing it with whatever we had around there, root beer, or, you know, that doesn't work with it, but, you know, we tried, and all of a sudden, I'm laughing, and I'm dancing, and the girl that lived out there, she was my first crush, Rosemary, I'll never forget. You know, midnight come, and she kissed me on the lips, people, right then and there, on the lips, all right? So, you know, I am well on my way. And, you know, New Year's come, and we went in there, somebody stole a bottle of champagne, and we go outside and pass it all around and everything. And went outside, you know, so nobody here has popped that cork, you know. But, you know, I'm thinking already. So, I don't know, some around 1, 2 in the morning, here comes Dad, you know, he says, load up, we're going home. So that's the end of the party, you know. And I thought that I had arrived. And, you know, this backward buck-toothed, pimple-faced country kid, you know, all of a sudden I'm Fred Astaire, you know, and I'm, you know, and you know, and I'm dancing and I'm funny and people are, you know, I thought were laughing with me, but anyway. So we start home. We're all in this, you know, and this is the important part of this story too. This is brand new, I think it was about 63 Ford Galaxy. Beautiful car. Big guys remember them, the car guys, yeah. And this is an important part of the story too. So we're all cramped up in there. There's four adults in the front, four kids in the back. We're heading home. And all of a sudden I start getting like flu symptoms. Place kind of clammy. Anyway, we hit the railroad tracks there in Salida, and the first person I puke on is the driver. I'm sitting by, I hit him so hard with that puke that knocked his head forward like that, you know. And so, and I thought, well, I'll give him a break and I'll just kind of cover up like this, and I've sprayed everybody across the floor, you know. I mean, this is champagne, vodka, root beer, you know. I think it was the first year that they made onion dip in a plastic container. You know, also too. You know, I mean, this is a mess. Anyhow, my dad can't. My dad's like, he's so mad he can't control himself. But he can't get turned around in the seat to start beating on me. But my sister's off over here. Now, she's deaf, and she didn't hear anything, you know. So next thing you know, she just got a laugh of puke. And boy, and I mean, she's mad, but she can get to me. She's already started pounding on me. So it's 2 miles from them railroad tracks to our house, okay? And it seemed like it, you know, it should have took, you know, at least 5 minutes to get home, but it seemed like it was done in 2 seconds, you know. And here we are, and my dad reaches in there, and he pulls me out, and he starts rolling me around the yard. And my mom, you know, now, you know, God bless her, she would come, you know, rescue me from this stuff usually, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, but she's busy cleaning this puke up and wiping people off and, you know, and saying, oh, I'm sorry, and, you know, and apologizing and doing all this stuff. And finally my dad has his moment of clarity, and he quit beating on me. And he picked me up, and he said, if you ever take another drink again, I'll kill you. Well, at that moment, he was my higher power, okay? I believed every word of it. So, you know, that's, you know, that backward buck-toothed, pimple-faced country kid, you know. It was, you know, I was back to being that. So, and here's the thing, folks, I didn't drink for a while, because believe me, I believed him. I watched him kill a bull with a crowbar one time, and I was impressed, you know what I'm saying? So when he turns on you, now, you know, and I do want to give them my parents their due. They were not violent, they were not alcoholic, they died in the same house that I was born in, but when you had it coming, you know, justice was swift, and it was brutal. But anyhow, but like I say, you know, I didn't drink for a while, but, you know, this progressive illness that we suffer some from, you know, eventually took me to getting dropped off at a place called Recovery Resources up there in Modesto. But, you know, I just want to talk a little bit about what John said. You know, when I met him there at Davis High School up there, this is, by my math, we've been friends now for 53 years. And that's the longest relationship other than my parents that I've had with any human being. But, you know, you hit high school, you know, and we're out there in the country, and there's a bus that drops us off here, and everybody, you get there, and everybody's a badass. Okay? I don't know if any of you guys, you older fellas, remember your car clubs and all this kind of stuff. Everybody's walking around there in a trench coat, had the collar up, is wearing beetle boots, and, you know, and high pocket pants. And I get off this bus with a pair of Wranglers, and, you know, and boy, I mean, we stuck out like sore thumbs, you know. And so it was a long walk from the bus stop down to where we'd go hide in the ag department from all this stuff, you know. And anyway, you know, I meet him out there in the parking lot with all the rest of the scholars. Yeah, and like he said, you know, well, what are we going to do now? You know, because I looked at him, he's a little pudgy, but by gosh, he was dressed like me. So we just looked at each other and said, we're partners. What do you want to do now? And I said, well, let's find one of these cars that's unlocked and we'll go have lunch. So anyway, that was the start of our relationship. But I was really grateful, you know, sometime around 66, 67, the hippies started coming around there. And I come to school, and everybody, all of a sudden, these guys were all wearing blue jeans again, you know, and everything, moccasins. And I had been to a rodeo, and I had a bull step on my back. And so I couldn't get my boots on, so I was wearing moccasins. Remember that? And I went around there on them crutches, and everybody else is wearing, they're wearing moccasins, you know. And it was great. You know, it's all love and peace, you know. They're smoking dope and, you know, taking sugar cubes and all this kind of stuff and doing all this stuff, you know. And it was wonderful. You know, the girls, they were, you know, God bless them. There was an alley down the way there, you know, you would go smoke and what have you, you know, before school. That's where all the scholars were out there, too. You can meet them all up there. But, you know, they'd come out of their house, and they'd get away from their house, and they'd look and make sure the parents wasn't going. They'd get underneath there and try to pick the bra, you know, and they're all wearing these notch, you know, sundresses and everything, and the hippie movement was in. And, you know, and everybody's just peace and love and all this kind of stuff. So one day, we're out in the barn, and he's got these empty match boxes. And he's putting alfalfa hay in them. I said, well, you got a pet rat or something? And he said, no. He says, I'm going to get us some infantry money. And I said, how are you going to do that? He says, well, they sell this marijuana in matchboxes, $5. And I said, I didn't know. I said, okay. So who are you going to sell this alfalfa hay to? He said, them hippies there at school. So, okay. So, you know, we're in the drug business now, you know, and I'm thinking, man, this is cool. You know how many matchboxes you can fill up with a bale of alfalfa hay? I mean, geez, you know, you can stack them up that high. So, $5 a deal, we're going to be rodeoing the rest of our lives. So, now, you know, we had to dodge all this car club guys and all the badasses and everything. But now we've got the hippies pissed off at us, you know. We can't get a break. Bow darts, you know, we couldn't walk anywhere without that. But anyhow, you know, that was kind of the start of the beginning of it all. And I still remember that first drunk. But I kind of want to speed up and get to sobriety. Like I said, my folks, you know, they stayed together. You know, there was no divorce or anything in my house. That's okay. I got one for each of them. So, you know, and I almost got one for my sister too. But you know, this woman turns out to be crazy. But you know, it says in here on page 82 about the alcoholic is running. You know, it's like a tornado running through the lives of others. You know, sweet relationships are dead. You know, and it goes on to talk about how, you know, that, you know, we don't, gosh, I was just reading it too. I was going to be a big shot and come up here and memorize it for you. But, you know, the companionship and everything has been uprooted, and selfishness and behavior and everything has kept the home in turmoil. Y'all look it up yourself. But up here at the top of it. But up here at the top on page 83, it talks about a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. And so anyway, You know, I'm blessed to be married to a strong-minded woman. That's just a nice way of not saying the B word. She's pretty strong-willed. But anyway, you know, but I'm blessed to have her, you know. I was telling her the other day, you know, I said, you should come down there with me. You've got 60 years of sobriety. That's how old she is. So, but anyway, you know, that tornado ruined through the lives of others. You know, you can put the amount of alcohol that she's drank in her life probably in this bottle. And then she's married me. So, anyway, we're going along here and you know, she doesn't know quite what to do with my lying, beer drinking, crank snorting, Copenhagen chewing, lying, gambling ass. And that's, you know, and that's what I turned into. And we didn't have steps. We didn't have this God that we talk about in our lives, you know, around here. And, you know, if you drove by our house, it looked pretty normal, you know. There's kids out there and everything. I'd sit out there on the front porch, give my little daughter, she'd be going to kindergarten, the bus would come get her, and I'd just set the beer behind me like that, wave at the bus driver, you know, everything's good, and then get, you know, bring the beer back. Yeah, but you know, this disease almost took her life. You know, this tornado that was running through the lives of others, she didn't know what to do, and it drove her to attempt to take her life. And you know, and this might be part of the story where y'all think that, well, okay, now he got sober and they lived happily ever after. I dialed 911 and I left. Okay, and then I ran for a little, you know, I ran for several months more after that. So, you know, none of this is because I'm some kind of swell guy or anything like that. But that's where this disease had taken me, and it took the, you know, the lives of others in my family with me too. So, now the good news is, though, she's gone from suicidal to homicidal. So, you know, we don't have to worry much about her anymore. But, you know, she'd had enough. I like to think that, you know, she hit her bottom and took me with her. But, you know, she'd come out there one time and you know, I also like to do this. What was old Mark calling the other night, that funny powder. And, you know, anyway, she found my funny powder. And I, you know, I'm a liar, okay? If you could register liars, I'd be the number one. I'd be like Wimpy on it. You know, I'd be like the Quarter Horse Association register right here. You know, that was my deal. And you know, and I got to the point where I would lie. And I would get pissed off if you didn't believe it, you know. And anyway, they call that sociopathic liar. That's a form of mental illness. And there's supposed to be a deal here with steps on it. You know, but anyway, that step two talks about, you know, being returned to sanity. And a little bit more about that later on. But, you know, like I said, she's had enough. And I told her, you know, I don't know who that is. And, you know, and she says, you lying. You know, and she grabbed the pitchfork. It was out there in the barn. She grabbed the pitchfork up. And she chased me over two barbed wire fences. Hit me up alongside the head with a flashlight and all this. And I'm still lying. And finally, she just threw the pitchfork down and said, look, Randy, if you want this, if you want that way of life, you can have it. But if you want me and them kids, and if you want to live here and be with us, then, you know, things are going to change. And I, you know, when I got sober, this is how it was. I was living in a guy's garage, and it was about here to the freeway from the Santa Fe Railroad tracks. First time that damn train comes along there, you know, it raised me up off the bed about this far. You know, everybody else is sitting in there watching TV and everything while this, you know, this train goes by down and around here. But anyhow, I guess I had a moment of clarity there. And she'd done been checking into rehab places and all this stuff. And so anyway, I drank my last three beers May 18th, 1990, on the way down to this recovery resources there in Sears. And she wasn't none too real happy with me and everything. She says, but you're supposed to be going there to get sober. Don't you think it's time to stop that? And I said, hell, I'm not going to go in there sober. They'll think I'm nuts. And they'll never let me out, you know? So anyhow, there's only three left, so I figured, you know, I may as well get rid of them. I'm going to be gone for 30 days anyhow. They'd be old by the time I get back. So. You know, but, you know, funny thing, what happens when you put three beers into an alcoholic? And guess where I'm at? You know, there's no bar or nothing around here. You know, there's no 7-Elevens, nothing, you know, hanging around this place. And so, you know, this irritable, restless, and discontent, they call it. You know, they talk about the doctor's opinion. That's what started in on me. And, you know, I'm laying in this detox bed. And they come and they hand me this book and several others, you know, and they said, read the first 164 pages of this book. And, you know, I thought, well, they won't let me out of here if I don't, so I figured I better get to reading. So I flipped this book open and I just happened to get to the part where it says, how it works. And I thought, well, hell, this is all I need. You know, we'll read this and fake the rest. And anyway, honesty is mentioned the first three times in the first three paragraphs. And I just folded the book up and I said, you know, I don't have a chance. There's no way a liar like me is going to be able to handle it, you know, is going to be that honest with himself or anybody else, you know. Everybody told me that you had to quit lying to yourself, but I had to learn to tell you the truth, you know. I had to learn to tell you the truth before I could even begin to tell me the truth. So I'm laying there, you know, and my body's like, well, where's the rest of the beer? Because, you know, when you drink three, there's a 12-pack coming, you know. Where's the funny powder? Where's the Copenhagen? Where's the fun? Where's all this stuff at? And I'm just restless, irritable, and discontent, and I'm starting to withdraw, and, you know, and I don't know, I'm laying in this bed, and across the hall, this nurse is sitting over there, a lady, I don't know exactly what she's doing, but I went over there and I said, look, I need to call my wife and tell her I love her and that I need to be here. And so she said, well, she just dialed up my number and said, well, since you was the asshole, you do it. And, you know, handed me the phone and she said, oh, and you've got 2 minutes to do it in. So I called my wife up and I said, I love you and I need to be here. And that was the first time that, and I can't remember when, that I actually told myself the truth. And I went back into that detox room, and I rolled around in there for 3 days, you know, and then I met a fellow named Ernie. Ernie was a South, you know, he's a big black fella. He's about the size of this door, no kidding. And, he seemed to me like he was. He probably wasn't quite that big, but he's close to it. And I'm in this detox bed, and he says, get up, come with me. And I said, well, where are we going? And he says, I'm not going anywhere, but you're going to a meeting. And I said, well, we'll just get my pants and everything. He says, you don't need them either. And he threw me another hospital robe to put over the one that was stuck to my body. And downstairs we went to a meeting. It was an NA meeting, by the way. And that was the first time that I'd ever heard anything about steps, you know, and all this kind of stuff. People were clean, you know, and, you know, like you guys are sitting around this meeting, and, you know, and they're praying and they're talking about acceptance and all these kinds of things. And, you know, and then at the end, you know, they're all hugging and then we're going to hold hands and pray. And I'm thinking, what have I done to myself? But anyhow, that was my introduction to it, you know. But, and then we get to these places, you know, and I, like I say, I needed to be there. I got, you know, it was exactly what I needed. It, you know, it was kind of clinical and everything. And we sat around in circle groups and all this, you know, and they wanted to know, well, how did that make you feel? Hell, I don't know. You know, ask her. She's crying, you know. Ask him. He's pissed off. Just leave me the hell alone, you know. And, you know, we're going through all this stuff. And then finally, we load up into a van. And they take us to a place called Freeway Fellowship that John was talking about. And, you know, I walked in the place. And it was like I was home. You know, for some reason, I'd made it home finally. And in there was real people talking about real stuff. You know, they didn't care them old timers in there. You know, I got 25 years now. Them guys that had 25 years then, they didn't care how I felt. And that was fine with me, you know. But they was talking real stuff. And, you know, and I began to have, I seen their faith in this program. And that gave me hope. You know, and so that just kind of transferred back and forth. And then I met my first sponsor there. He was quite the guy, Walt Wilson. And, you know, he would have his chair meetings. You know, he'd sit down and he told me to sit down here and chair this meeting. And I said, Walt, I don't have the time. He had to have 6 months or something like that. And he said, Well, sit down there and chair it anyway. He said, you think these guys are going to know the difference? He said, besides that, it should be easy for a phony like you. And so, anyway, God bless him. I've been chairing meetings ever since. So I've yet to give up my chair. So the interesting thing about Walt, though, you know, is he had, I don't know how much time he had, but anyway, for some reason, he picked up that first drink, and he was dead in a year. You know, it was, I don't know the word to use, it was just amazing to watch this thing go down the way it did. He tried hard to get it back, and he just couldn't. You know, this disease is so, like John said, it's so cunning, baffling, and powerful that, you know, it just... You name the disease that you want to watch any of your loved ones die from, alcohol killed him. It was just relentless. So, you know, he taught me a lot about what's inside this book, but he taught me about this disease in that last year of his life, you know, that just how powerful this thing is. But, you know, they told me that you can't mess up an AA meeting. There's no way you can screw up an AA meeting. This lady came in and she wanted me to co-chair at another meeting across town, a little place called Pass It On, or no, Living Sober. And Walt said, I said, well, I don't know if I should do that or not. He says, when does she want you to do it? Tomorrow night. She says, well, get your ass over there, you know. So I get over there, and this is where all the bikers are. Any bikers in the crowd? Okay. I see a guy back there in a cowboy hat. That's good, man. When I got here, there was more bikers than there was cowboys. We got them outnumbered tonight. So anyhow, you know, I get there, and there's all these motorcycles out there, and I'm kind of wading through them, you know, being careful not to touch nothing. And get in there, we do this meeting and everything, and everything went fine. You know, I didn't screw it up until we stood up to pray. And my buckle hung up on the table. And I flipped that damn table over, and all them books and everything that was on it, you know, they all scattered, and all them bikers were grabbing their butt knives and looking around like, you know, somebody shot themself. I have screwed up an AA meeting. I hope I haven't screwed this one up. So anyhow, you know, I that's just some of the sober things that I've gone through. You know, I had a... I've done more in this program than I ever thought that I could do in the last 25 years of sobriety. You know, I've been places that I never thought I would go. I've met people that I thought I would never meet. You know, it's just been incredible. I've done a lot of other things too. I mean, I've lost a business. No fault of my own, but I lost it. I lost both those parents in sobriety. You know, and I just want to say that one of the most spiritual moments that I've ever had in my life was when my father passed away and my hand was in his. And I wasn't down at that slider club that John was talking about, you know. I could have been down in there and I could have cut and run and everything, but, you know, I took care of his business for him and saw to it that, you know, that he was well took care of, and, you know, until the day he died and everything. But that moment, and I don't know how that sounds to some folks, how that could be so special, but it was to me. You know, one is he wasn't suffering anymore, and the other one that I was there being the son that I, you know, that I should have been all along. So, you know, back to working these steps and everything, though, I hit the ground running. You know, I found AA. I was never forced to AA. I've never had a court card or anything like that. You know, and I just loved it. You know, I loved the smoke. I loved washing them ashtrays, coffee cups, and all this kind of stuff that we used to have to do. And I bypassed a few things up there. You know, we did all that first step there in that rehab I was at. That second step says something about, you know, come to believe in a power greater than ourselves to restore sanity. You know, I'm not crazy, you know, so we can skip along with this thing here. I was going to kind of change things around a little bit, you know, streamline it for y'all. You know what I mean? I don't like change, but if I can change things for you, then I figure I've done something for all of us. So, you know, and this the third step, you know, talks about turning our will and our lives over to that care to that higher power, you know, as we understood him. Underline, and I've got the God thing already. I'm ready to do the fourth step. And so, I've been sharing with old Walt Wilson about all this stuff. I come in there one night with a piece of paper, and I go like this, and I said, I hand it to him, and I'll go back there to wash my cups and everything. He says, what the hell's this? And I said, that's my fourth step. And he says, yeah, but what the hell is it? And I said, well, you know, I'm thinking, what kind of sponsor is this? You know, he doesn't even know what a damn four-step looks like. I said, that's a list of people that everybody just pissed me off. And I said, you know, we need, he says, well, yeah, but what the hell is it? And I said, it's my four-step. He says, go on back there and wash your dishes, and I'll look at it anyway. I said, so what do you think of my four-step? We're ready to do five, huh? And he says, he says, I threw it in the trash can over there. And he said, but when you take the tarp out tonight, he said, it's right there on top. If you want it back, you can have it. But anyhow, you know, I'm going along here, doing this AA thing, and I know that this is the only thing that works for me. And right there in that part about the farmer, you know, coming up out of the cellar, saying how, you know, ain't it grandma, the wind's quit blowing. And I can't, you know, nobody trusts me. Nobody, you know. My dad says, yeah, I'll give you 6 months, he'll screw up, you know. When I come, I've got to back up here a little bit just for you. Where's Rick? Rick, just give me there's a guy over there with a cane. Just come up here and hit me with it, you know, whenever you've had enough of it. So, I come out of rehab there, and I get home, and I've got two teenage daughters. One of them thinks she's Janis Joplin. One of them thinks she's Cyndi Lauper. I've got a nerd son and a six-year-old. Okay? Thank God for the six-year-old. You know, I've got somebody I can relate to around there, you know. And then I've got this suicidal, homicidal wife, you know. Strong will. Why? Anyhow, I think the one that thinks he's Janis Joplin still thinks he's Janis Joplin. The nerd son, he's in his room. He does three math problems a night. He's in there all night long. And I go in there. I said, what are you doing? He says, it's trig. And I said, not in my house. Give that stuff over here. You know, so anyway, it's math. You know, I don't know all these things. So I'm trying to find my way into the household again, you know. But I'm running up and down the road doing all my meetings. You know, I'm going to do 90-90 and all this kind of stuff and everything that's suggested to me. But nobody's trusting me, you know, and everybody's wondering what this. And, I've got a job and my coworkers are all checking me out and everything. And, you know, the ones that I used to run with, you know, because I used to think I was a legend out there. And, you know, they either thought I was a narc, and somebody said, oh, he's a priest now, and all kinds of stuff. And anyway, you can't trust him either way, you know. So, and I'm going up and down the road here, and I'm doing all this stuff, and like I say, nobody's trusting me and everything, and my dad's watching me and all this, and I finally get a six-month chip, you know, and I tell old Wallace, I said, I'm going to go out there and show my old man this, and he says, why don't you just put it in your pocket and keep your mouth shut? You know, because after I finally did a real four-step, he said, well, imagine that, people not trusting you. So, you know, he doesn't trust me. Well, I just want to know who I'm seeing down there at them AA meetings. She had a different word for seeing. I like to look out and see who catches that, you know. You did, huh? Yeah. Okay. But anyway, you know, and so, you know, and I'm a year sober, you know, and I know that this is the only thing that's ever going to work for me, you know, is this deal called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know that I finally got a chance of doing something that I thought I could never do. And that's grow up. So, you know, I had a tray bale out there in my barn. I had a bale of hay out there, and I sat on that bale of hay every morning, and I'd read stuff. You know, I mean, I'm a spiritual son of a gun by now. I know the Lord's Prayer by heart, you know. I don't need a little card anymore with Serenity Prayer on it and all this kind of stuff, you know. And I'm reading all this stuff, you know. I've got my big book out here, you know, and I'll read that. And at work, I've got my little Bible there in my locker out there at work and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I mean, I'm doing the deal. And I'm nuts. You know, I'm crazy. And if you're going to be, let me tell you something about being alone and crazy. If you're going to do that, being in a barn is a good place to do it. Okay? And here's, you want me to tell you why? I'm gonna, so okay, thank you. You know, the animals get a kick out of it. Okay? You know, they know that they're going to, you know, they're going to get fed. You know, they're going to sit there and they're going to munch some hay and they're going to watch you. Yeah. Here it comes. You know, it's feeding time. Yeah, there it goes on as a hay bale. So, you know, like I say, I'm crazy and I bypassed a little bit of the recipe up here. And, you know, and I thought, you know, and I'm on a good pity party, you know, nobody trusts me and all this kind of stuff. What am I doing? Why, you know, I'll just show them what a drunk country boy is all about. And I don't know what God had in mind for me at that moment, but I was at the turning point. You know, I was convincing myself that I needed to show them. And God said, you know what, son, you need to show me. And for whatever reason, I slid off that bale of hay and I got on my knees. And instead of trying to be all spiritual and this guru and everything else, I said, God, help me. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And it was that, you know, and you want to know what happened next? She said, yeah, you want to know? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. But everything in my life changed at that moment. You know, and I didn't know it. But see, what happened was is that, you know that old saying, you know, the eye of the hurricane, you know, that calm in the storm? That's where I was at. God put me in that. And through all this out here is I could see all the chaos in that tornado that I had caused. You know, I could see why my dad didn't trust me. You know, I could see why she wanted to know who I was seeing down there. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, I could see why my kids were, you know, like, well, hell, he's gone every night of the week now anyway. But I began to get a balance, you know, between maybe program, you know, maybe tonight I maybe should stay home and see what's going on around here, you know. And, you know, I started to get a balance and everything. And then I think the 12 by 12 talks about in the last paragraph or so in step two about, you know, we have no problem, you know, considering ourselves to be problem drinkers. But we shudder at the fact of being mentally ill. And so I had to, you know, I got to take a look at myself and see the insanity of my life. You know, and I let God remove that, you know, start removing that insanity from it. But first I had to see it. You know, I didn't see it. I didn't think I was insane. But, you know, when you do the amount of alcohol that we do, you know, that right there is your ticket in. Okay? You know, that's your ticket into the loony barrel right there. So, you know, I began to see that, and I slowed down and I worked those three steps again. You know, and I redid that fourth step, you know, and gave it to Walt before he died. And, you know, and that dad of mine, you know, another 6 months went by. Now I've got me a chip. I'm going to show him this, you know, and Walt, put it in your pocket and keep your mouth shut. And, you know, that'd be a change for you right there, huh? So, you know, 6 months goes by, and then pretty, you know, and another 6 months goes by, and Walt Wilson's dead, and, you know, and I keep putting them chips in my pocket and keep my mouth shut. In 5 years, you know, I'm picking up this 5-year chip, and me and my dad are going somewhere, going to check cows or something, and he said, you know, he says, I was wrong about you. And I said, Dad, you had every reason to be, you had every right to be wrong, you know, and that was it. You know, that was kind of how cowboys do things. That's how he did stuff, you know. You know, I hear a lot in here about, you know, I wasn't going to be like him. You know, I wanted to be like him, you know, growing up. I mean, here's this World War II veteran, you know, wore a cowboy hat and everything and smoked Winston cigarettes, and the best I could do was steal his Winstons. And then I'd blame it on John whenever he'd come up missing a few, you know. Yeah, damn John, he's smoking again. Tell him he needs to get a job and buy his own. So, but anyway. I don't know. What time am I supposed to shut up? Now? 10 more minutes? Okay. I'm glad I got you back there in the corner of that clock. I can't see the damn thing, so just throw something at me whenever we're done here. But, yeah, I was kind of throw a shoe and I'll duck it like George Bush did that time whenever that crazy guy threw that shoe at him. Anyhow, you know, I'm going to leave you with a few things here. You know, when I got here, I was living in that garage. There was a for sale sign on my house. You know, I have a suicidal/homicidal wife. Her bags are packed and she's ready to leave. And I don't know how God did all this, but he managed to do it. You know, somehow or the other, in the first 15 years of my sobriety, that house got paid off. You know, it's amazing what you can do when you start. Financial insecurity left me, Oh, Walt told me, he says, because I'm going to meetings, and then finally, I'm going to all these new meetings and night meetings and everything, and Walt says, you got a job? And I said, yeah, good one, and I told him about it and everything. He said, what the hell are you doing here? And I said, because I wanted to be a patient for a little while longer, hell, that's the first time I've been off work other than hangover days for a long time, and they're just paying me, so hell, I figured, I'd be a patient again for another 30 days or so. Walt says, you need to get your ass back to work. He says, you know how many of these people around here want that job? I said, well, yeah, it does okay, And he says, get your ass back to work. So I go back to work, and I start showing up on time. I'm not stealing stuff from them and all this and that, and they're asking me to work overtime and all this kind of stuff. And it's the damnedest thing, when you don't have three connections anymore and a bookie to pay off every week, what you can do with this extra money, Plus, I don't have to lie to her about where it all went. It's amazing, Somewhere along after that fifth step, I love the steps up there, and I love that fifth step especially, because it was right after that I began to look the world in the eye, I don't have to go home and lie about where I've been tonight. And I want you folks to know, for a liar like me, that's big time stuff, It really is. I can't stress that enough. How amazing that is. That crazy homicidal, suicidal wife, with her bags packed and everything. Here a while back, we celebrated our 30-year anniversary on the island of Kauai, and I took a surfing lesson. Are there any surfers in the crowd? You look like one. You got a surfer shirt on, but anyway, yes, no. This is what's bothering me, I go around here and there's this many people in the room and I'm the only one that stupid to go ahead and take surfer lessons. But I have newfound respect for surfers anyway. So if you know one, why? I really do. They got their extra special. But I come here to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm still that backward buck-tooth pimple-faced country kid. But if you hang around a lot and you eat like me, you're going to gain some weight, so you ain't going to be skinny for long. If you hang around long, the pimples will go away. And my head's growing into my teeth, so you can't really tell that I'm buck-toothed anymore anyhow. But here's the deal. I'm okay with that today. For a long time in my life, I wasn't okay with that. I wanted to be something different. Other than that, I wanted to impress him. He's a tough guy, man. He'd clear out a bar and everything. I'd just follow him around. Stuck my head behind him. Behind his back. And, boy, I'll tell you what, that'll teach him some against, mess with our outfit, huh? Yeah. So, and I was always afraid, that she was going to find me out. So, I had to. I was all the time, trying to be something that I wasn't, and I'm just, I'm just grateful that I can be who I am. I'm nobody special. I ain't nobody, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm just me. And I found that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I come here and like I said, I found my home. And what it is that, I fit here with you misfits. Okay? This is where it is for me, is I fit with you misfits. And when this gentleman read more about alcoholism and come to the part about science may one day accomplish this but it hasn't done so yet, and kind of laugh. And I kind of think about that all the time. I remember what Walt told me. He says, I hope that, when science does come up with a cure, when they come up with something, I hope they make it a suppository so I can shove it up their ass and I can keep on going what I'm doing here. So anyway, thank you so much for having us down here. If you're new here tonight, the gentleman of 3 days, please keep coming by. I hope you heard something tonight between the two of us that you heard something that'll keep you coming back, that you come back for tomorrow. That's all it is. And like I say, the world record for sobriety is 24 hours. And so, hopefully we'll all get another 24. So thank you again for having us down here.